Welcome to Career Practitioner Conversations. This podcast is presented by the National Career Development Association. Hello, and thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Venable, NCDA Director of Professional Development, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to the third of a three-episode series of conversations with Justin Wright, Tad Meyer, and Carly Inkpin. They're the authors of the book, Finding a Job That Loves You Back. They're joined by Courtney Warnsman, NCDA's Trustee for Private Practice, Business Industry, and Agencies. This episode focuses on strategies for working with mid and late career clients.
Welcome to our third installment of this podcast conversation around collaborative negotiation and career development and how those two things go together. Today, we're talking about the part of this work that happens when you get to mid-career, when you're changing careers, you've reached a fairly senior role and you want to have a switch. You've made your classic midlife crisis moment, and now it's time to shift, or you're just moving along and everything's fine. There's a conversation to be had around fulfillment and opportunity to take a step back and ask what really matters to you, where having some career support, coaching, counseling can be really helpful. And many people don't get it. So we want to talk today about what is the work that is useful to do at that stage of career? How do we as professionals in this space approach it? And what gets in the way of people actually stepping up and seeking out support when they're in that mid-career moment of decision? So the first question I want to ask is, how are the questions that people face different when they get to the mid-career? Imagine you're working with someone who is at a mid-career point and they're coming to you for support. What are the orienting questions that are driving them that are going to be different than someone who's, 23?
So there could go a lot of ways with this question. So I'll latch on one part of it, which is really the options available to them. Because, well, first of all, actually, first there's a mindset, then there's the options available to them. The mindset when someone's 23 is often, I could do anything. And if I say yes to one thing, I've got to say no to a whole bunch of stuff. That's overwhelming. And when people get to mid or later career, it often reverses. And it's, I'm a specialist in this one thing that I've been doing for 15 years. I can't do anything else. And so one thing is a hurdle to get over that. The other is, what they can do is much broader now. They can get a full-time role, of course, but they could also maybe join a board of directors, maybe start their own consulting firm to advise people on whatever, maybe join an advisory board for a startup. There are lots of different options available to them now, which weren't before, which makes it a very robust conversation about which way to go and what would fulfill their needs.
So a few things change. One of them is that people have much greater access to a variety of resources, which could be financial stability. It could be a network of other people to work with. It could be past experience and credibility. It could be credentialing. But early in our careers, we're often up against the challenge of not having access to the world we want to be a part of. And mid-career, that's often less of a problem unless you're making a wild change. And even then, you're likely to have more access than you would have, 20 years earlier. And another piece is that you are likely to have greater clarity of what you can do and have done, which can both be liberating in the sense that you don't feel a huge opportunity cost to every single choice as you might in the early career, where you're like, but if I become an astronaut, then I can't be a doctor or whatever you're dreaming of being. But also it can be limiting because you imagine that if you have been doing accounting, you will forever do accounting. And it doesn't necessarily have to be like that. And as Tad said, that opens up a lot of questions. Do I want to be on a board? Do I want to do part-time work? Do I want to be an advisor? Do I want to shift my role within my organization? That there's some more room to play. Courtney, what would you add?
I want to throw the word intentionality into this piece of things. You know, Justin, you just said about people who've been in accounting, they've been doing it all their lives. And I often find myself having conversations with clients where we're talking about the fact that their career has sort of sucked them along. They did what they were supposed to do out of high school or out of college, and they've been promoted and they followed people, you know, followed managers. And now they're sort of in this place of uncertainty. And what I like to remind them of is how cool that for the first time in your life, you are having the opportunity to intentionally look for what you really want, both from job satisfaction, from money, everything else. And I see them a little bit relieved when they recognize that they're not out there on an island that, oh my gosh, how can I be 52 years old and not know what I want to be when I grow up yet? And so just shifting it to them, again, we've used the word agency several times, just, you know, taking agency and realizing this is cool. I'm in charge here. I get to start making some choices about my own future that I just hadn't thought of before. I'd just been cruising along, paying my bills, taking care of the family, and now I can do something different.
Yeah, I'll add to that piece of the puzzle, Courtney, that being on the therapist end of these things, often I'm sort of operating in the fairly emotional realm with people. And there is, particularly for folks who have either kind of been pulled along by circumstances and maybe not had a lot of opportunities in the past to make super intentional choices, and they're finding themselves with that, being in that position for the first time, or people who've made choices based on a lot of constraints in the past. For example, really having limited options of what was doable in the past because of family needs, for example. And then as their children get older and their children have fewer needs, that, for example, they themselves might then have more opportunities available to them to think through for job options. Or just finding themselves with a new amount of open, so sort of new amount of openness and possibility. And at the same time, there often I find can be some real work that needs to be done around the emotional side of feeling like it's possible to give oneself permission to be intentional for the first time, or some real permission giving around, is it okay to even be thinking about a change? Is it okay to even be thinking about the possible costs and risks that might be associated with taking a leap at this particular stage in my life? And so there's some real work on finding compassion and some work on helping folks give themselves permission to be able to think expansively. And it's not my place to give anyone permission on what to do, but to find a place for them to be able to think more expansively. And another piece of this puzzle often is there really can often be some real burnout that is bringing someone to this decision point of, do I want to keep doing this? Can I even keep doing this? And if not this, then what? And so, again, I find myself in the place of trying to sort of facilitate and open up permission for there just to be space to think through all of that and for clients to think through it themselves in a really compassionate way.
And that, connecting back to our very first conversation, is a really interesting moment for us to bring some advocacy, because we all get to see inside the careers of many people. And most people only get to see inside the careers of maybe themselves, maybe a spouse, maybe a friend or two. And when I first started in the conflict resolution world, I did dozens and dozens and dozens of informational interviews. And I was amazed and somewhat horrified to discover that almost everyone I really admired in the field had ended up there sort of by accident. That most people's careers unfold through a series of accidents and good fortune and random choices and things they had no control over, with some choice woven through. But they didn't say, I want this, and then set a course and, you know. And we can share that. That's really normal. If you're mid-career and you're like, how did I get here? Is this what I want? You are in good company. Most people are there. And then if your next thought is, can I make a change? Is this safe? Do I even have permission to care about what I want? You're also in good company. That's really normal. And so that seems like a great place from our first conversation to be doing some advising that says, this is something that I know from my context that you might not. The other piece I wanted to note, Carly started moving us into the conversation about what gets in people's way. And one of them is feeling like, I don't have permission to do this. And I'm interested, Courtney and Ted, what do you see cause people? Because I think based on the conversations we've had, this seems like a great time to get some career support. But a lot of people don't. So why?
So a lot of times, especially with people in the mid to later career, they are starting to feel like they've got a certain status. They've made some achievements, and for them to admit to, you know, the rest of the world that they don't know what to do next, that they're not sure, that's a real leap for them. And so it's almost and they're worried about exposing themselves. And a lot of times they don't trust anybody enough to share that, which means they're trying to do it themselves. I have to do this myself because I can't expose myself. I got to just figure it out and make the move. And that is, I think that's one of the biggest hurdles I've seen about having people give themselves permission to ask for help.
And I want to throw in here some other about both permission and status. One of the things that I find with clients, and Tad, you said they've reached a certain status, and with that has probably come a certain compensation and all of that. And then often when they start looking for those really fulfilling roles for their encore careers or whatever they want to call it, those roles are not in the same place from a compensation perspective. And so they're like, but I just, you know, I can't take a step back, or I feel like I'm taking a step back. And to me, it's about giving themselves permission to make a decision to take a step forward in doing something they really love or a place they really want to be. And if the salary goes down a little bit, as long as they can pay their bills and live their life and do all they want, it's okay. But sometimes they almost are apologetic about wanting to take a new role that isn't that same level of status or money, even though they feel like they would just love going to work every day. So that combination, that giving them permission and giving, more importantly, having them give themselves permission to make these kinds of changes.
It seems like one of the, or several things that are supportive for the ways we see people getting stuck are normalizing this. Most people have some version of, wait, what am I doing here? And struggle to give themselves permission to make a change. That us being able to understand what they actually do care about, according to the point you're making, you want to be able to have a work life where you go into work overjoyed to be doing what you're doing. And that's more important to you right now than the status or the compensation. And so what would making choices based on that look like? All right, for us to, in that, back to our first conversation, that very coaching skill set, understand what their needs are and demonstrate that there is a path to meeting them. And then also to normalize or even frame, I liked your language, Courtney, of saying, you know, this isn't a step back, this is a step forward towards something you care about. And Tad, you were talking about the sort of shame of saying, like, I shouldn't need advice here. One of the phrases I use in my coaching a lot that I love, that I got from a coach I really admire, is, you know, you can either ask for help or you can do it yourself, and you can't do it yourself. So what are you going to do? You know, that there is this sort of this intrinsic interdependence of being human. Being alone for extended periods of time is deeply psychologically damaging to humans. Like, we are meant to be in together, in relationship, dependent on each other. And so to normalize that and say, the most successful people are the ones who know how to lean on each other, not the ones who do it all alone. That's an illusion. That's a myth of our society. And so I want to close with asking the question to you all. So what's the coaching look like? How do you actually support? How do you counsel? How do you advise differently when you're working with someone at this phase, and I'll start by sharing a tool from the book that Tad Carley and I've written, The Finding a Job That Loves You Back, which we have taken from the facilitation world, which is called Appreciative Inquiry, where we frame the positive future focus. So rather than saying, what do I want to do next, which is a very focused question, we ask, what about what I'm doing now do I love that I want to have endure? And what do I want to be different going forward? And that forces a rigor towards questions of what is it I do want? Because I can say, I really don't like working in an office with no windows. But that doesn't tell me what I want. Do I want windows? Do I want to work not in an office? Do I want to be outside? Do I need a break from my job because I'm so burned out? Like, that's actually not that helpful as saying, what is it you do want going forward? So that's just an example. But I wonder, what are the tools you all pull on or the methodologies you use when working with people at the mid-career?
So for me, it's similar to what, in addition to the appreciative inquiry, it's almost what I do with early clients also, which is finding out what's most important to them. Mm-hmm. It's getting into those, what we call in the book, your interests, your needs, your aspirations, and your drivers. What is it that is really important to you for the next stage of your career? And the appreciative inquiry identifies many of them. And then going back to some of the other tools we use to do that really can help people get solidified in what they want. And then because they are established, they've got this whole network that they didn't have when they were 23 that they can draw on to collaborate with to try to figure this out, which is really exciting.
My go-to is the career construction interview that Mark Savickas is known for. For those of you who don't know it, our role as the facilitator of this is we're asking our clients questions that seemingly have nothing to do with career. You know, who were people you admired growing up? What are some of your favorite TV shows? These kinds of questions that just get them talking. And then our role is to listen for what they're saying between the lines that they don't even realize they're saying. You know, sometimes if I say to a client, well, you know, what's really important to you on the job? Like Justin said, they go down a negative. Well, I don't want this. Okay, well, what do you do want? But when we ask these questions in a very I don't even know what the word is. Well, ask the questions in a way that they're just answering questions about things they like and things they watch and where they like to be. And then it's fun then parroting their words back to them and seeing their eyes light up and go, I just said that, didn't I? It's like, yeah, you did. You knew this all along. It's just, there's too much pressure. I guess that's what I was looking for. Too much pressure to answer the question. Well, where do you want to go next or whatever? And so just getting them talking, the word authentically has come up in our conversation several times today, just very authentically, and then listening for what they're already saying. And it also builds some confidence in them that, okay, I've got this. I did say that. I didn't advise. All I did was say back to you exactly what you said to start with.
I can add that a piece of this that I often find ends up being necessary in the process is when someone is making a change as an already established person or a person who has built a career, whether it's intentional or not, there's been a lot of effort. There's been investment of time and money and whatever it might be. Then the idea of making a change really often also comes with, there are some pieces of loss. There can be a sense of loss that needs to be worked through, and trying to acknowledge those pieces of loss and to pull apart, to puzzle out, to tease out what pieces feel possible to sort of set aside and put behind you for now in order to allow those things that you really want to move forward towards. And I think I'm thinking back to the example that you gave, Courtney, of ending up working with clients in this stage who realize that they might need to give up some of the status or compensation in order to do something that aligns better with their values, aligns better with their interests. And actually, I find myself often working with people in a sort of slightly reversed, people who are in helping professions, in the public sector, people who have been doing jobs that feel very important to them in terms of their values, but maybe they have off like fair just their entire career have struggled to make ends meet, or their entire career have felt overworked and underpaid, and they have excellent skills, they really care about what they're doing, but they just can't afford to struggle and barely make it anymore. And there's this sort of permission process around what would it mean to put my own needs forward more now, but what there that also might mean adjusting to a slightly less value driven process or a job that doesn't quite feel like it's helping the world as much. And what does it mean to process that loss? What does it mean to set that aside at a different era in one's life? So just working through that.
Yeah. And one of the themes through this conversation is that our role shifts from guide to collaborator. At this stage in someone's career, we're less likely to sit down and say, all right, so you're starting out, this is your first resume, you're going to go for your first interview, let me give you some ideas about how you're going to lay this out, and here's a process, and we're going to walk through it. And it's much more likely to sound like you are wanting to figure out where you want to go, and I will be supportive in that. And once you figure it out, you know so much more about the context of your industry than I do. I couldn't possibly give you advice. However, I know way more about negotiating than you do. And it's much more obvious that these are negotiations because your power and access are likely greater than they were before. Your expertise is greater than it was before. You obviously have something to offer. And so how do you frame that? How do you share it? How do you understand what they care about? We can help you with that part of it. But it becomes this very cool collaborative design process where you're both of you are bringing expertise in a way that is both they are the experts on themselves, obviously, and that has always been true. But now they are also the experts on their industry, their work, their skills in a way that it was just less salient at the beginning of the process. So this is the end of these three wonderful conversations we've had. I want to thank you, Tad, Carly, and Courtney for being part of this. And thank you to NCDA for giving us some space to have these conversations. And we hope you enjoyed them.
Thanks, everyone.